This episode is brought to you by Hill's Pet Nutrition. Every shelter pet deserves a second chance, and you're making it possible for thousands of them every day. Because when you feed your pet Hill's, you help feed a shelter pet, which helps make them healthy, happy, and more adoptable, changing their life forever. So they can change yours. Over 14 million shelter pets fed and adopted. Science did that. Visit hillspet.com/podcast to learn more.
Hello, hello, everybody. It's Monday. For a lot of people, that doesn't equate to a good thing, but I must say, I feel very energized today. It's beautiful outside, going to be beautiful all day long, probably the nicest day we've had here in New York City this entire year so far. So I gotta say, I'm pumped. Also pumped coming off of the weekend that was. I had a great time in Vegas, super successful Power Slap event on Friday evening. That transitioned into Saturday, which was one of the biggest UFC events of all time, no doubt. And the UFC actually ahead of time, they did. They said, this will be the greatest card in history. And we wanted to believe it, right? But that's such a big promise. Like, what if they don't deliver? But guess what? The promotion absolutely did. I'll say the fighters absolutely did. And perhaps the biggest moment of the night, the battle for the BMF title. Max Holloway got the KO over Justin Gaethje in literally the last second of the fight. So here's Dana White on that epic KO.
That was the ultimate holy shit moment of all time. How many times have you seen a fight where the guy wins, you know he's winning, they click the 10-second thing and the guy puts his hands up and they just run around, move around? Uh-uh. He's got the fight won and he's in there with one of the most dangerous fighters in the business, right? And he says, let's do this. If something beats that fight of the year, holy shit. I don't want to see the two guys that are involved in that fight at the end of the fight.
Yeah, even leading up to that final exchange, Holloway was dominating big time, and that's what Dana was talking about. He even broke Gaethje's nose in the first round and gouged his eye early on. Social media was a very good time during this fight. You had to make sure you were watching the fight, not just reading all of the reactions as they were happening in real time. So most of what I saw, people were in agreement, Holloway was up, but a few like Henry Cejudo were believing that it was actually tied going into that fifth and final round. Here's what he said, 2-2, going into the fifth, hashtag UFC 300, 2-4, Justin, meaning belonged to Justin Gaethje. Okay, despite the differing opinions, I do not think anybody was expecting that KO with 1 second left on the clock. I know that I wasn't. I was ready for the fight just to go to a decision, hand raise, you know, a little bit of a anticlimactic moment, but no. Oh my gosh, in the very last second, the craziest, like Dana called it, holy shit moment of the night, possibly even the year. That performance earned Holloway a fat bonus check, $600,000 to be exact, because recall that typically bonuses are $50,000. But for UFC 300, Dana announced ahead of time he was going to be making $50,000, $300,000. So not bad if you're on the receiving end of that check. He also received $300,000 for fight of the night, so $600,000 total. That is a nice payday. And Holloway took time after the fight to shout out his opponent, who said this after the fight.
This is what BMS is known for. You know, the baddest mother effer. If that's not a BMF moment, I don't know what is. If the cards just flip and Justin was up, if he felt like he was up, I knew he would give me that 10-second shot. So he's a bad man. And I don't know if I ever going to share the octagon with him again. He's a legend, brother.
Yeah, and that's the point, is those last 10 seconds sometimes are throwaways. You know, when a fighter knows that he's up, they just run the clock out. No more damage done. Holloway pointed to the middle of the octagon, and the two of them just were having an absolute slugfest, which was really cool to see, and it ultimately left us with that ridiculous KO. Another shout out, we'll call him another BMF. He's not the official BMF. He doesn't have the belt around his waist for it, but Jiří Procházka, wow. Going lethal on Alexander Rocic in the second round for a brutal TKO win to stay in the light heavyweight title hunt. He got the other coveted performance of the night bonus. That's $300,000 in his pocket. But now we move on to another iconic moment that didn't happen necessarily with the hands, but it happened on the mic. Brazilian-born Renato Moicano making an iconic statement after knocking out Jalen Turner, saying this, quote, I love America. I love the Constitution. I love the First Amendment. I want to carry and own effing guns. I love private property. A big statement for him right there. So he had even more things that he went on to talk about. He talked about the government's misuse of tax dollars, saying, quote, I hate taxes and everybody hates taxes. And if you say I like taxes, you don't like taxes. You just want to pretend that you're a good person. Where's the lie here? All I have to say to this is preach. Moicano is the best. Now, on top of what already was an insane night at the T-Mobile Arena, came after the fights occurred. An announcement from Dana White that we have all been waiting for. Listen.
June 29th. Conor versus Chandler. Woo! 5 rounds, 170 pounds.
Okay, there you have it. It is no longer an if, because Conor McGregor is back June 29th, 2024. And now here to help me break down all of the madness from UFC 300 and looking ahead, of course, to that Conor McGregor, Michael Chandler fight, we've got former UFC fighter, fitness expert, and one of my buddies, Bobby Maximus. Hey, hey, Bobby. How are you? I'm so happy to talk to you.
I am good. I'm glad I'm here. Thank you.
Okay, so UFC 300, I know you were watching. What was the moment that stuck out to you the most?
There were actually two big ones for me. Number one was obviously Max Holloway beating Justin. You're right. Most fighters, the last 10 seconds, even sometimes the last round, fighters will mail it in completely. And he swung for the fences, which was absolutely amazing to see from a fighter's perspective, but also a fan's perspective, because right now that's what I want to see when I tune into these things. I don't want to see boring fights. I want to see people going at it. And then the other one, which is really low key underrated, is Kayla Harrison winning her UFC debut. I really think she's going to be a huge force going forward. And I was really interested to see how she'd do her first time in the octagon.
Yeah, she definitely did not disappoint. And there were a lot of fighters who were reacting very positively to Kayla's performance, which you love to see, you know, the support among all the fighters. Kayla's always been a badass. But yeah, making that transition and on such a big stage, you know, you never know what's going to happen. So good for her.
No, and it's huge because you don't know. You're right. Like, you could be an Olympic gold medalist. And there's been a lot of people that have had the credentials to fight in the octagon and they don't pan out. And I really think it sets up some good stuff for the females division in the future.
Yeah, the female division only growing in the UFC, which, of course, I love to see. And you know what? I'm pretty sure all the guys love to see as well. So cheers to Kayla. Cheers to Max Holloway. Cheers to every winner on that card, including Armin Sarukian. He won by decision. He was the second fight on the main card of the night. He appeared to punch a fan during the walkout, Bobby. It was very bizarre. I watched it a couple of times because I was like, wait a second, what actually is going on here? I don't know if he was like reaching in to like say what's up and then it turned a little hostile, or the guy kind of like, you know, jutted his arm out and hit him on the way out, like maybe trying to slap him on the shoulder, and Sarukian just didn't appreciate it. I don't know. What did you think happened there?
You know, my opinion, I'm always on the athlete's side. I've worked with a bunch of guys in the NBA, a bunch of guys in the NFL, fighters, obviously. And fans think they have way too much freedom. They buy a ticket. They think they can abuse athletes. They think they can say whatever they want. And it's about time a fan got touched. Like, if you're going to stick your face or stick your nose somewhere it doesn't belong, I can't blame a fighter, an NBA athlete, an NFL athlete for defending themselves in some way. So I don't know the whole story about what happened, but I have a hard time believing Armin just decided to attack a fan randomly on the way to the octagon. Like, guaranteed that person something that they had it coming.
Yeah, we just saw another. Can we roll the video one more time and we can just talk over it? Because it's pretty funny to see. I mean, you see him walking out, minding his own business, right? He's got a fight. And next thing you know, he is like throwing major hands, like, you know, over the top, like hammer style. I think you're right. I think Sarukian has a fight, right? He's about to fight at UFC 300 in front of a sold-out stadium, why would he instigate a fight on the way out to the octagon? That would make absolutely no sense. You're right. It definitely was the fans' fault.
He didn't pick something, somebody random out of the crowd. Someone said something that they shouldn't have. Guaranteed. And, I mean, that's what happens in life.
Bobby, before we get into your days specifically, I want to talk about your legacy in the UFC leading up to 300. But have you ever dealt with a fan like this where someone's just been a little bit like outside of the box of what should be allowed and you've had to react maybe in a way similar to Sarukian or maybe not so extreme?
Yeah, a little bit at the weigh-ins. UFC weigh-ins and UFC press conferences used to be really open to the public. Like the sports evolved so much compared to the days. I mean, I fought in Ultimate Fight Night 5. That's, I think we're at Ultimate Fight Night 200 right now. And so that was a lifetime ago. They used to have it at the Hard Rock in Vegas. And so there used to be crowds of people around all the time. And people forget that the MMA is fairly mainstream now. But in the early 2000s, MMA was not mainstream. And the type of fan base that we attracted wasn't indicative of your, I'm going to say, good, upstanding citizen. And so, yeah, there were always people around that were looking to push that line.
Okay, now let's get to, and I'm sorry you had to go through that, by the way. I don't understand fans that think it's acceptable to invade one space or to use any type of even remote hostility. Bobby, you've gone through a lot in your career. You have had two separate stints, technically, in the UFC. And on the day of UFC 300, and this is exactly why I thought about you coming onto the show, because you had tagged me in your post, which, by the way, I'm so appreciative of that you would think about me. You posted about your legacy in the UFC and cited some of your accomplishments leading up to this milestone event for UFC. Competing in the Ultimate Fighter Season 2, competing in UFC 58, 62, and Ultimate Fight Night 5. You won Submission of the Night. You also competed, which I'm very familiar with, on the Ultimate Fighter Season 30, where you were the oldest person in tough history, which is a really cool accolade to have next to your name, right? It just shows age ain't nothing but a number. You still got it. And everybody knows that. So, Bobby, when you look back and you think about all the things you were able to accomplish, what type of emotions does it stir up in you when you see how far the UFC has come and you were one of the reasons it was able to get this far?
Yeah, I mean, number one, I'll say this. I feel an immense sense of gratitude towards the UFC, towards Dana White, towards the matchmakers, people like Mick Maynard, Sean Shelby. It really gave me a platform to do the things that I love. I think a lot of times in life, athletes can look back with bitterness. They look back and say they wish they made more money. They look back and wish they had more opportunities. But everything I have today is really built off that stint in the UFC. And so number one, I'm extremely, extremely grateful. The other thing that I think about is it's really hard to believe that we've come this far. Like, it actually was a real moment for me thinking about the fact we're at UFC 300, especially when, like I said, I used to fight at the Hard Rock. I used to fight in front of 300, 400, 500 people. The fact that UFC 300 was that big on a worldwide scale, it's amazing to have had a small part in it.
Wow. Yeah, it's pretty cool to look back on. And, you know, I know you talk about there are some people who have maybe some bitterness when they look back on certain parts of their lives or careers and maybe thinking, you know, I should have done more. I should have received more appreciation for what I did, whatever have it. Is there anything, though, when you think back, you think, you know, there's something else I would have loved to have done if I had the opportunity to still do it?
I mean, absolutely. I would have loved to fight for a belt. I mean, I had a lot of talent. Honestly, I just couldn't put it together at the right times in the octagon, which is a skill in of itself. That's why it's so impressive. That's why I brought up Kayla. The ability for her to do that on opening night is unreal. But all the fighters at that level, everyone's insanely talented. Everyone is incredible at what they do. It's who puts it together better on the night. So I would have loved to have that ability a little more to win a title. But again, when I look back, like I said this, and it made some people mad, But if Dana called me up right now and offered me a sandwich to fight, I would do it just out of gratitude. I love it so much. There is no feeling like standing in the middle of the octagon in front of 20,000 people, having people from all over the world watch you. Like, it's an absolute privilege and an honor to be able to do something that you love, that frankly you would do for free in front of that type of crowd.
Yeah, what kind of sandwich would it have to be if you were going to fight again? I mean, that's
it would have to be pretty
low offer. But
is there a
triple decker club?
Yeah, maybe a triple decker club. It might be a little more than a sandwich. A suite at the Mandalay would probably do it for me too. Maybe if Dana took me for
there
a nice
you go.
Dinner, all in.
Okay, well, you have no lack of accomplishments in your life since being in the UFC. You're not fighting anymore, but you are one of the experts among experts in the fitness world. Age 45, you're still in better shape, Bobby, than 99.99999% of people in this world. This is how I got to know you, because I have a lot of friends in the fitness world, and you came up on my radar years ago and we started becoming friends, even before we overlapped when I was covering The Ultimate Fighter 30 for ESPN. And I got to work with you more closely then. But Bobby, ever since I've known you, your training regimen has been absolutely out of this world. I imagine it's still the same way.
Yeah, nothing changes. And honestly, we live in a society where people think that as you get old, you have to accept declining performance. That's just not true. You just have to work for it. And I always tell people, if you're out of shape, it's because you're not putting in the effort. It's the one area of life where you have complete and utter control over your own destiny. You can work your tail off and you can get laid off at work. You can be a great partner, a great spouse, and your partner can step out on you. You can be a great driver. Someone can rear end you from behind. Like, there's so many areas we don't have control. When it comes to physical fitness, when it comes to how you look and feel, it's 100% in your power. So anything I do, it's not special and unique. I just put in a bit of effort.
Well, yeah. And also, it's been proven, keeping yourself in good shape, lifting weights, making sure that your body fat levels are where they need to be, leads to a much longer life.
Oh, yeah. You're happier. You're healthier. You make more money. You're better in relationships. Like, across the board, it's the ticket to a better life in every area. Like, it's about a lot more than just looking good.
Yeah, and there was, I saw this over the weekend, and I was like, this ties in perfectly to this conversation. A 58-year-old woman, her name is Donna Jean Wild. She's from Alberta, Canada. She set the new world record for the longest plank for a female, 4 hours, 30 minutes, and 11 seconds. First of all, I mean, I'm bored out of my mind. Planking for 1 minute. I'm like looking at, you know, my Apple Watch on the floor, like, okay, are we almost done here? 4 hours, 30 minutes, and 11 seconds. I mean, this is wild.
Yeah, it's insane.
And she's 58.
But it's also wild what people are capable of when we look at it. Like, you have, it's funny, like, we look at stuff like this and it's absolutely, it blows my mind, by the way. But we have no idea. Like, if you're watching this on your couch, you have no idea how high an NBA player can jump till you're at a game courtside and you watch a person jump. You have no idea how fast a person in the NFL is. Like, a normal person has no idea what people are capable of. And people just keep pushing the limits over and over and over again. And I'm here for it. I love it.
So what are your PRs right now, Bobby, on all the big lifts?
Big lifts, I can deadlift 615 pounds. I can overhead squat 385. Those are two of my bigger ones. I did a bench press test. I've got a couple of ex-NFL guys in the gym right now. And I did a 225 test. I hit 36 reps, which I wouldn't win the NFL combine, but I'd come pretty close, which, not bad for a 45-year-old.
Not bad for a 45-year-old, not bad for any number year old. Oh my God, an overhead squat? I mean, those are tough. For people don't realize, you have the weight above your head, and then you squat down. I mean, that is like full body strength at his finest. Like, you've got to have balance. You have to have lower body strength, upper body strength. You've got to have great core strength and abilities. Oh, my gosh. Bobby, I mean, I knew I was going to be impressed, but I wasn't expecting those numbers, even though I probably should have been.
Well, I appreciate that. And if anyone, you can see the helmets in the background. If anyone from the Dallas Cowboys is listening, you heard my combine numbers for 225. If you guys need help this season, give me a call.
Hell yeah, hit this guy up. Speaking of big lifts and, you know, age not being a factor in some points, there was a little girl, Bobby, 9 years old. She's from India. She just set a world record of her own in Asia. She deadlifted 165 pounds. This is a 9-year-old girl, weighs 55 pounds, and she deadlifted 165 pounds. Let's take a look at that video. We showed this last week, but I'm so impressed. Unreal. I mean, okay, so what are your thoughts on this, right? Because I also want to, like, A, give her all the flowers, because this is phenomenal. And from what I can tell, she's using pretty good form. Like, it doesn't look like she's using her back. It looks like she's been trained well. But is this, I mean, because you train people of all different types, is this something that as a young girl, she should be just ultra cautious about doing on a regular basis? Or is she all good as long as she's using really good form?
I mean, I think she's all good as long as she's using proper form. Like, we look at kids as fragile, but there was a day and age at 9 years old, you would be putting in a full day's work. Like, we're a couple of hundred years removed from that. And it's funny that people will freak out when they see kids lifting weights. But if kids are in the backyard or they're out in the forest or they're playing on trails and they're lifting rocks and jumping and playing, it's totally acceptable. So if she's using proper form, she's watching herself, I'm totally for it.
Yeah, it was crazy to see. I'll just tell you one thing. When I was 9 years old, I was not deadlifting 165 pounds. I don't even think I was picking up a weight. I was an athlete, though. I was playing all, you know, soccer, softball. I mean, I was getting after it with the boys at recess. I think I had a big chunk of my hair pulled out once in a game of football at recess because my hair was down and it was laying on top of the football. So, you know, I was never afraid to get my hands dirty, Bobby. So I guess that's still important to recognize.
Yeah, and kids are in fights all the time, Charlie. Like, it's absolutely normal. Let kids be kids.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty cool. Speaking of, actually, you know what? Let me get to this. Let's wrap up the UFC block of stuff, and then we'll get into a couple other topics. Bobby, you are all about, I actually forgot. I want to even reverse it even further. Diet. Diet is the other component when you're putting in work in the gym. If you don't have your diet on point, you're not going to be able to lift numbers like you do. I know you're a massive carnivore, Bobby. I'm also a massive carnivore, and I wouldn't respect you if you weren't. All right, I'm just going to put it out there. All right, I don't respect the vegans and the vegetarians of the world. I'm sorry. I have to be honest about my feelings on this subject. Bobby, we all know that meat is king, right? It's protein, it's good for you, gives you all, it's the most nutrient-dense type of food on this planet. Why is our government continually pushing things like vegetarianism and veganism and talking about how cows burping are to blame for climate change when we all know that's just complete BS? And when you look at the vegetarians and the vegans, I'm sorry, but they look to be the most unhealthy of everybody out there.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think it comes down to money. I don't trust politicians at all. Everybody's in their pockets. And if the food industry throws enough money at a person, they'll all of a sudden say that, you know, veganism or whatever is good for you. That's what it comes down to. It's just about money. But everybody on this planet knows that steak's the healthiest thing that you can eat. It's nature's perfect vitamin. It's not processed whatsoever, and it will fuel you. And there's been a bunch of people who have been vegans, who have been vegetarians, who've been unhealthy, who've made the switch back to eating meat, and all their ailments have been cured. And so I don't believe the hype, and certainly don't believe something a politician's telling you, because somebody is in their pocket 99 times out of 100.
Well, yeah, and you also, the thing they don't tell you, the vegans, vegetarians, is that they're taking handfuls of additional supplements.
Yes.
Because they're not eating meat. I mean, they have to get their vitamins and minerals artificially because they can't get him through their food. So they're just swallowing down tons and tons of vitamins each and every day. So there's something else for you all to remember on this Monday. Keep eating your meat. Okay, on the subject, staying healthy, and on the subject of not trusting politicians, because Big Pharma, I mean, talk about enraging me. I'm somebody that believes in going more of the holistic route, or I even have dabbled in peptides now, currently, and also previously. And I find them to be ultra useful because they offer solutions to certain things that are going wrong in your body in a more natural manner rather than taking a medication that's pushed to you by Big Pharma, which ultimately I think does worse for your body than if you hadn't taken it in the first place. Dana White, Bobby, is a huge proponent of what they're calling biohacking, right? He takes peptides. He works closely with the doctor. He follows a regimen that most of us aren't able to have access to because, of course, it costs a lot of money, but it works wonders. Do you buy into all of this stuff? I mean, you've probably seen the picture of Dana White then and now. He's looking insane.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to dispute it. He looks great. He looks incredible. So like whatever he's doing, it's working for him. But there is a lot of cutting edge science that people have access to. And we're learning more and more and more about the human body. Like the advancement of the human body, our understanding of it is light years ahead of where it was 20 or 30 years ago. You don't have to accept getting older anymore. You don't have to accept having aches and pains. You don't have to accept living a mediocre lifestyle. So I'm all in for anything that will help push that envelope. And you're looking at somebody, I have a sauna in my house. I have an ice bath in my house. I actually ice bath before I came on here. It's a morning type routine for me. I do everything that I can to get an edge. And why wouldn't you? You'll invest in cars. You'll invest in watches. You'll invest in purses, shoes. Like, why not invest in the one thing that you have forever that's irreplaceable, your body?
Yeah, your health is the only thing that you can't get back if you let it go. So you're right. That is the one thing. If you have the money, that is what you should absolutely be investing in. Okay, we have to just keep going down the road, Bobby, of why you shouldn't buy into what politicians are saying, because there's a lot of politicians out there who keep advocating for biological men and boys to be competing within women's sports. And that's just something I think if you have even a bit of common sense, you can realize this doesn't make sense. Bobby, you work with men, you work with women. You, of all people, realize how biologically different that we are and what we're capable of. When you hear all of these stories continually, one of which just happened a couple of days ago, it was in Oregon. There was a trans-identifying male who finished second in two girls' races, whereas if he would have been competing among his biological category, which is males, he would have been among near the last of them. So when you hear stories like this, Bobby, I mean, where does your mind go?
You know, it's the World Athletics Council has already ruled on this. In 2023, they ruled that a transgender female who had been through male puberty could not compete on an international level for track and field, for aquatics. Simply put, biological males have an advantage over women. And here's where we've lost the plot. Somewhere along the line, people have got it in their heads that sport is about inclusion. Sport's not about inclusion. Sports are about fair play at a competitive level. That's it. So it's not about somebody's rights. You're not talking about preventing somebody from being able to buy something at a store or receive medical care. You're not talking about somebody being treated differently because of the way that they look. It's literally just about fair play at a competitive level. And biological males have a huge advantage. There's also a safety issue. Like, we're coming off UFC 300. The whole goal of the fight commission, when they sanction fights, is to look after the safety of the fighters. They would never sanction a fight where a person that was born a biological male would be fighting a woman. It just wouldn't happen because it would be dangerous.
Yeah, I think that's one thing Dana White would absolutely never allow, which is one reason why we especially appreciate people like him, because they are not willing to bend to the woke mob who says you need to believe the same things that we do when in all reality, I mean, for hundreds of thousands of whatever of years, we know that there's a difference between men and women. So, Bobby, I'm also grateful that you recognize that as well. And now before I let you go, there's a lot of madness going on all over our country. Cities on the East Coast, cities on the West Coast, cities in the middle of the country. Most recently, there was an incident here in New York City, which I'm not surprised to hear about because you probably heard about all of the TikTokers who have been getting punched in the face while shooting videos, while just casually walking down the street, and it's a completely random attack. Well, now, unfortunately, there has been a little girl, 9 years old. She was at Grand Central Terminal with her mother. A repeat offender, who should be in jail probably at this point, was out and just randomly attacked this girl, punching her in the face. I think, do we have any video of this? Oh, no, we have his mugshot, though. This is the guy who punched the small girl in the face. His name is Jean Carlos Zarzuela, 30 years old, free without bail, despite allegedly punching an elderly woman earlier this month. He was taken out of the precinct in handcuffs. He's supposed to have a court arraignment in his for his latest attack, but who knows if any of that's actually going to go to plan. As we know, the politics in New York City are absolutely horrible right now. Here, just continuing on the horrible politics path. Bobby, what is someone supposed to do in an incident like this? Like, from somebody with the fitness expertise, how can a parent protect their child from having something like this happen? Or what are some self-defense tactics possibly that people should just have in their back pocket?
Well, the biggest thing for self-defense, people always want to look at punching. They want to look at kicking. They want to look at some form of grappling. But honestly, the biggest form of self-defense that you can have, and you're looking at somebody that worked as a police officer for 6 years, in addition to fighting in the UFC, is just—
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I was a cop in Toronto for 6 years.
Oh my gosh, you're even cooler than I thought.
Thank you.
Wow.
Here's the deal. Awareness. You have to be aware when you're in a public space. People like this are everywhere. The world's not a good place. It's not filled with rainbows. It's not filled with unicorns. There's a lot of bad things that happen all the time. So the number one thing that you can do when you're out, especially when you're with your kids, is to be aware. And Charlie, we've all had that feeling, and I promise you, you've had it too, where you've been walking on a street, you've been walking on a sidewalk, and someone's giving you that feeling, like that ick, your spider sense goes off, that person's a problem. And a lot of times we choose to ignore that, or we got our face in this, and we're not paying attention. And so the number one way that you can prevent something bad from happening is just being a little bit aware. And every time you're in public, and again, I'm a father of three, whenever I'm with my kids in public, I'm hyper aware of what they're doing, where they're going, who's around them. You just have to keep your eyes open.
Yeah, and judging by this person's mugshot, I'm just going out of a limb. I have to imagine they were probably acting like slightly erratic as they were walking through Grand Central Terminal, probably because they look like, you know, maybe they don't have a home of their own, probably dressed a bit disheveled, maybe had a type of smell emanating from them. This is at least what I'm used to seeing here in New York City when it comes to people like this. You're right. When you see something like someone walking who you think they could be an issue, instead of waiting for them to become an issue, move to the other side of the terminal, right? Just
walk away.
I guess the answer is be more proactive than reactive.
Well, exactly. And we've all had a feeling too, where you go to get on an elevator, and I'm a big, strong guy. I'm 6'3". I'm 245 pounds. I've fought in the UFC. There's not many people I'm scared of, but I also don't walk around looking to get in physical altercations. And there's been times I went to step on an elevator and somebody on the elevator has given me that feeling. And I just haven't got on. No, I'll wait for the next one, because avoidance is a better practice than getting in the middle of something.
Yeah. Well, Bobby, I definitely would never mess with you. I hope no one decides to mess with you because you know what they say, F around and find out. And I think with you, they would find out real quick. Bobby, I'm so happy that we got a chance to catch up. You are awesome. And I'm so grateful for you taking the time. Also grateful that you, you know, one of the pioneers, we'll call it, in UFC, paving the road to what ultimately ended up being, as promised, the most epic event in UFC history this past weekend. So cheers to you. And I hope to catch up with you again soon.
No, I really appreciate it. I love your show. And I've loved watching you get everything you deserve. You're one of the hardest working people I know. And so it's awesome to see you, like I said, get everything you deserve. And awesome to have you involved in Power Slap in the UFC. That makes me really, really happy.
Of course. All right, Bobby. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thank you.
Outkick the Morning will be right back after a short break. Stay tuned.
Okay, everybody, I just feel like we are going down a rabbit hole of bad politics, right? I mean, we started in one spot, we made our way to another, to another, to another, to another, but that's unfortunately what the world seems to be comprised of these days. I mean, bad policy after bad policy. And I unfortunately was encountered with another of these bad policies over the weekend. Here you can see a photo. This is something that's pretty close to where I live. And this is a guy, you can see him on the bottom. He's sleeping. He's kind of like nestled into his stuff. And he's got a whole bunch of stuff just out on the sidewalk. Well, let me just tell you now, that stuff is all still out there, but it's much more organized. Like those clothing racks filled with shirts, hung up on their hangers. There's jackets. I mean, everything is very well organized. Like this guy is completely made camp on the street. And it's a very organized camp, right? It's not like this guy just had his stuff on the sidewalk and is like, I don't know where I'm going. This person has deliberately set up to what feels like live right now on the sidewalk. So I was confused. I was like, what's going on here? So I spoke to someone who was familiar with the situation because as you can see, he's outside of a storage unit facility. So what I was told was, yeah, he wasn't paying his fees on his storage unit. So he had 10 days to come and collect his stuff. He was upset about it, which I'm sorry. I mean, that's kind of the deal, right? If you get a storage unit, you pay for it. I mean, no one else has an issue with it. That's how storage units stay in business. Anyways, this guy was so furious. Now, I don't know what his living situation is. I don't know what his money situation is, but he's trying to take a stand. So, you know, he's been yelling out stuff all afternoon. Oh, don't trust this place. They try to steal your stuff. Don't put your stuff in this facility. Well, now, in order as a protest mechanism, he has his stuff out on the street and he's using the sidewalk as his own personal storage unit. Now, you would imagine that immediately something could be done, right? He's in front of a private business. He's taking up space on a public sidewalk. But no, when police came, because they were called, they said there's nothing we can do about it because he's not blocking an entrance. So this guy in New York City has the right to quite literally set up a home on a sidewalk and no one can do anything about it. This is allowed in New York City because of our politicians and the egregious policies that they pass. For the people who are upset about it, guess what? You have a big opportunity to vote later this year. I would exercise that right because this is not acceptable. It's disgusting. And the fact that I now have to watch this person and look at them as I roam my neighborhood upsets me. And here's what I hope. I hope this guy, when he falls asleep at night, because he's got some like decently nice stuff hanging on those racks. Maybe somebody, hey, listen, if someone's looking for some free clothes, wait till he's asleep, go take all of his clothes, and I'm sure then he will find another place to store all of his belongings. And on that note, everybody, that is all the time that we have. Thank you so very much for being here. Big shout out to Bobby Maximus for joining the show. That was an awesome conversation. Again, a guy that I've known for years now. So awesome to be able to catch up with him on the capacity of the show, talking a little UFC, talking a little fitness, talking a little bit about the bad politics permeating New York City and beyond. Everybody, have yourselves a fantastic day. Follow me on social media at Charlie on TV, and I will see all of you tomorrow morning.